Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's solicitations as picked by listeners like you. This is Preview Spotlight number 202 for the September 2024 solicitations, with highlights picked by listeners like you. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs, of which there are so many to choose from. There's DC Connect, there's the Image catalog, the IDW catalog, the Marvel previews, the Diamond previews, the Next Phase catalog over at Lunar, and then there are some items that are in no catalog whatsoever, because they're on Kickstarter or some other thing. But we like to cover all of those things here in the Preview Spotlight, and I like going through all of these catalogs. Now granted, it does take a little time. You can get digital copies of all of these. We've got some links in the forum threads for these episodes, but it's a great way to find out what's coming up, what's for you, and what's not. Because not everything is for everybody. There are certain comics some people are going to love, I'm not going to like, some I'm going to like, and other people aren't going to love. And that's great, that's why we do these episodes, but that's also why you need to look at these pre-order catalogs. Not every shop is going to get every comic, so to make sure they get the ones you want, you need to know what you want, you got to let your retailer know. So I recommend picking up the pre-order catalogs, either digitally or physically for the ones that are available physically, because not all of them are. Spend a little time once a month going through it, see what's available, maybe you'll find something that'll become your new favorite comic in the future. So once again, that's the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Image Catalog, IDW Catalog, Marvel Previews, Diamond Previews, Next Phase, No Catalog, and whatever other catalogs come out in the future.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the DC Connect, and I am on page number 2. Literally, the first solicit in DC is Justice League Unlimited number 1, and it says in big, bold, a new Justice League era begins here with superstars Mark Waid and Dan Mora. So Mark Waid and Dan Mora have been doing an excellent job over on Batman Superman World's Finest. And I think that was the team that they had on there. But Dan Mora, I love his art. Mark Waid, good writer. And we are getting the Justice League back together. The Titans replaced them for a while, which was kind of a silly idea. And so we're bringing them all back. It looks like it says Watchtower Rises. This is coming out of this stuff that's going on with the Absolute Power. So I don't know exactly what happens in that story because it's still coming out as I'm recording this. I have not read the ending of it, but whatever happens there is going to lead to a new Justice League. The cover looks nice. Everything's fine. Of course, one thing that's nice, it's going to be $3.99 for 32 pages versus $4.99, which we see a lot. All the variants at DC are like a dollar more, so they're $4.99. I never get the variants. I get cover A because I'm not paying an extra buck just for some cover art. Just not what I do. I will tell you what it says here. It says the Justice League is back and bigger than ever. In the wake of Absolute Power and the DC All-In Special, Darkseid's death. Well, all right, spoiler. Darkseid's death has triggered a massive power vacuum in the DCU. And Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman must unite like never before and expand the Justice League to encompass every hero, championing the forces of good in the face of incredible evil. All right, well, that hasn't happened in anything that I've read, so sorry for the spoiler there as I'm reading this. But that's how solicits work. Sometimes they spoil the books that we haven't even received. As our heroes work to uncover the mystery of the Dark Lord's successor, Ray Palmer's Atom Project triggers a race between hero and villain to control the fate of metahuman abilities on planet Earth, which threatens to destroy everything the League has built. Worlds will live, worlds will die, and a surprise is waiting in store for the on the last page. Do not miss the dawn of the new era of the Justice League. It all begins here. Da, da, da. Just the creative team, I knew I was going to pick this up. Hopefully it's good. I'm wondering where Darkseid died, and why are they filling a power vacuum? He's on the side of evil, so wouldn't the power vacuum be if a really good character like Superman died? I don't know. We'll figure it out. I'm here for the ride with you guys. On to my next pick.
Hi, I'm Billy Hogan, host of the Superman Fan Podcast, and I go by Superman Fan on the forums. My first DC Comics pick is on page 2 with Justice League Unlimited number 1. Since Dr. Moe already picked this issue on the forums, I'll not repeat the solicit. I'll just say that I'll be getting the main cover by Dan Mora like I usually do. And I'll just say that while I didn't read the Absolute Power miniseries except for the tie-in issues in the Superman titles, I wanted to pick up this issue just to see what was going to be set up for the Justice League. I always enjoy reading their stories. I think my favorite era of the Justice League was back in the 90s with Justice League Europe, which is referred to by Justice League fans as the Bwahaha League because of the humor that was prevalent in that series. But while there was a lot of superhero stuff going on in Justice League Europe, it was a very character-driven story, which is what draws me into a title more than anything else. I look forward to seeing what's going to be set up for the Justice League, even though I won't be getting this series just because I've stretched my comic book budget as far as I can. But I couldn't resist the temptation to check in with the Justice League at least briefly with this issue.
Dr. Mo here with the DC pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Justice League Unlimited, number 1. For a certain generation of superhero fans, when they hear the words Justice League Unlimited, they are probably transported back to the Cartoon Network series of the mid-2000s, that being Justice League and then its sequel, Justice League Unlimited. Now, someone in DC marketing or editorial or even Mark Waid himself probably realized that 2024 is the 20th anniversary of the launch of Justice League Unlimited cartoon series. Now, it also happens to coincide with the fact that the Justice League franchise has been on the sidelines of DC Comics since the events of Dark Crisis. Also, it happens that there has been a summer event series running in the pages of DC Comics right now called Absolute Power, which happens to be written by Mark Waid and drawn by Dan Mora, who are going to be the new creative team for this Justice League Unlimited series. So what does that bring you to? Well, it brings you to a new era of Justice League greatness that is headed by Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Obviously, I mean, you kind of need those three pillars, but they also have a team comprised of, or at least for the first issue, according to covers, Black Lightning, Star Sapphire, Captain Atom, and the Ray Palmer Atom, or at least I'm assuming it's the Ray Palmer Atom. That is. Now, one of the other things that links the comic book Justice League Unlimited series with its Cartoon Network namesake is the utilization of the Watchtower. Now, certainly there have been other Watchtowers throughout the course of Justice League history after it was introduced in the Cartoon Network series. Appears to be a key point because if you look in the pages of DC Connect, there are some models on subsequent pages that show an outline of what this new watchtower looks like. I'm curious to see if there will be some support staff and so forth. But clearly, the new Justice League Unlimited comic book series, is borrowing from its Cartoon Network predecessor. Now, I think it's very much a smart move on the part of DC to launch this new series on the backs of Absolute Power. I'm certainly not going to get into Absolute Power in this clip. I will just say that clearly for some characters, namely Star Sapphire, you may want to read Absolute Power. You certainly want to read the Jeremy Adams Green Lantern series, in which Carol has been part of that as well. I think it'll probably kind of give you sort of a precursor for where Starfire is coming from. I'm certainly looking forward to this book. It's got me really pumped. I've been enjoying Mark Waid and Dan Mora's work on the Batman Superman World's Finest title. Certainly understand why Mora had to step away for this and another title that apparently he's going to be working on as well. If you are a fan of the duo, I strongly encourage you to pick it up. Justice League Unlimited, number one, can be found on page 4 of the digital version of DC Connect. The regular cover costs $3.99. The variant covers cost $4.99.
My pick is also Justice League Unlimited number 1 on page 2 of the DC Connect. This is not the first time Mark Waid's done the Justice League. He's had some great runs before, and I'm looking forward to another great one now. And I'm really happy Dan Mora is on the art with him. They've been a great creative team over on Batman Superman World's Finest, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do here. So once again, that's Justice League Unlimited on page 2 of the DC Connect.
This is Nick with the previews. Pick from the DC Connect catalog. This is from page 7, Detective Comics number 1091. Now, what caught my attention first was this, like, bloody hand that's kind of hanging from the roof over Batman as he's looking at something. But the second thing that caught my attention here was we have writer Tom Taylor on Detective Comics. And art and cover, Mikhail Janin, or Janin, or whatever you pronounce his name. It's a $4.99 comic, which I'm not always the fan of, but in this case, it is for a 40-page comic, so you should be getting most of your money's worth out of that. The solicitation says, when we last left Bruce Wayne, he was offered a mysterious youth serum known only as Sangreal, what that promises to rejuvenate his body and mind, making him as strong and nimble as he once was. But can he possibly accept this strange gift? Meanwhile, the sinister scalpel-fingered villain known only as Asima stalks the shadows of Gotham, slaying small-time criminals with surgical accuracy. But what is the purpose of these murders, and how do they concern the Dark Knight?
This is Jason with my first pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 10, it's Superman number 20. Now, I know Billy Hogan from the Superman Fan Podcast is going to be going over this one, but I'm really excited with this particular storyline that they're doing with Superman. Not only do you have the character that basically killed him in the 90s, but you also have one of my favorite characters who, for the most part, operates behind the scenes, but usually in the far future, not necessarily in the present. But with the powers that he has, obviously, the Time Trapper can come to any point in time. So that's very interesting. So I look forward to seeing what direction they're taking this. How is he involved with the Doomsday fight that's going on? And it says, you know, the Time Trapper will reveal his ultimate secret. And I do look forward to seeing what that is. What is his ultimate secret? Like, are we going to have a new version of the Time Trapper? Is he going to be a different character than he has been in the past? Or is it something about Clark or Lois? Or what is the revelation going to be? I don't know, but I do like Joshua Williamson as a writer, and I know this is going to be a great storyline to check out.
Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 10 with Superman number 20, written by Joshua Williamson, art and cover by Dan Mora, variant covers by Dan Panosian, Brad Walker, and Chris Samnee. There's also a 1 in 25 variant cover by Dave Johnson, and a Creature Commandos variant cover by Carmine DiGiandomenico. and I hope I pronounced that name correctly. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale on November 27th. Superman and Superwoman investigate Lois Lane's new powers as they deal with the unstoppable Doomsday. But when the mysterious time trapper reveals his ultimate secret, it shakes Clark, Lois, and the rest of the super family to their core. I wonder if the secret the Time Trapper reveals is that he's actually a member of the Superman family from the far distant future at the end of time, which was a plot twist near the end of the 90s 5 years later Legion series. What intrigues me the most is the storyline involving Lois Lane's new superpowers as Superwoman, which reminds me of the New 52 Superwoman, who was that version of Lois Lane. And I hope that this Lois doesn't meet the same end that the New 52 Superwoman Lois Lane did. But this is certainly a very interesting storyline. And of course, there's Doomsday. And how is the Man of Steel and the rest of the Superman family going to defeat him this time? Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 12 with Action Comics number 1074. Written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki. Art by Clayton Henry, Michael Shelfer, and Skylar Partridge. The main cover is by Clayton Henry, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Sebastian Fumara and Ibrahim Mustafa. And there's also a 1 in 25 variant cover by Mark Spears. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale on November 6th. Superman, back in time? Great row. A dying planet, a desperate scientist, a last son. It can only mean one thing, Krypton. To uncover the secrets of the Phantom Zone, Kal-El must journey back to the days of his birth planet, and into the lab of Jor-El himself. What shocking secrets will link the greatest prison known to the cosmos and the nefarious villain Aether? And does the Man of Steel stand a chance of making it out alive? Plus, Supergirl's mission halts as she finds herself captured and awaiting her fate at the hands of the highest bidder. The main Superman story in this issue reminds me of the story Superman's Return to Krypton from Superman number 141, which was the November 1960 issue, which came out probably around the time I was born. You can find that story reprinted in Superman in the 60s trade paperback. I just hope that Jor-El is not made quite the villain as Brian Michael Bendis did in his storyline when he wrote Superman, when he took his grandson John Kent on an adventure. I'm also happy to see Supergirl in her own story and not just a Superman supporting character. I always like to see her get the limelight in her own stories. Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is also on page 12 with Action Comics number 1075, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, as well as Joshua Williamson. Art is by Clayton Henry, Michael Shelfer, Skylar Partridge, and John Bogdanov. It's great to see John Bogdanov again. I enjoyed his art back in the 90s on the Superman titles. The main cover is by Clayton Henry, which is the one I'll be getting. And variant covers are done by Sebastian Fumara, Steve Beach, Megan Hetrick, and Lucio Perillo, as well as a 1 in 25 variant cover by Ibrahim Mustafa, and a 1 in 50 variant cover by Kieron Grant, as well as a foil variant cover by Clayton Henry. The cover price of the regular edition is $5.99 for 48 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are also $5.99, and the foil variant covers are $7.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale on November 13th. Join the celebration as the original superhero series reaches its 1,075th issue, packed with just as much Superman action as always, nearly a century later. An all-star cast of talent and characters help ring in the milestone, starting with the continuation of Phantoms by Mark Waid and Clayton Henry. Kal-El has traveled back in time to witness the birth of the Phantom Zone, crafted by his own father, Jor-El. Can father and son reconcile without destroying the time stream? And will the Man of Steel acquire what he needs to defeat Aether before his homeworld's fate is sealed? Then, in a special Election Day story, Perry White's mayoral ambitions come to a head, and the future of Metropolis will be forged anew with the outcome. Plus, Supergirl discovers there is more than meets the eye when it comes to the being she's sworn to protect. While this looks like it's going to be an action-packed issue, with three storylines going on, the main Phantom story, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with Perry White's mayoral campaign. I would like to see him become mayor of Metropolis. I think with the integrity and sheer grit that he has, that he would make a great mayor of Metropolis. And the plot twist in Supergirl's story is definitely intriguing. Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on the very next page, number 13, with Action Comics number 1076, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Clayton Henry, Michael Shelfer, and Megan Hetrick. The main cover is by Clayton Henry, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Sebastian Fiumara and Megan Hetrick, a 1-in-25 variant cover by A.L. Kaplan, a Creature Commandos variant cover by Larix, and a McFarlane Toys variant cover. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 20th. Escape from Krypton. Superman has uncovered the secrets of the Phantom Zone from the clutches of his own father, Jor-El. But now the real challenge begins, returning home in one piece. It's a daring dash for destiny in the latest installment of the Action Comics Weekly. Plus, Supergirl discovers the crime that started it all. I remember the Phantom Zone played a large role in Superman comics when I was a kid in the 1960s, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Mark Waid has reimagine the Phantom Zone for current Superman stories. Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is still on page 13 with Action Comics number 1077, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Clayton Henry, Michael Shelfer, and Megan Hetrick. The main cover is by Clayton Henry, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are done by Sebastian Fiumara and Megan Hetrick, and a 1-in-25 variant cover by A.L. Kaplan. The cover price for the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 27th. Death to the Phantom Zone. Superman and Mon-El are reunited at last, but are our heroes too late to stop the impossible threat of Aether? The Mad Wizard has breached the realm and begun decimating planet Earth. The Super Family and the Justice League are holding on as best they can, but this sounds like a job for Superman. Plus, can Kara put her feelings aside and carry out the mission Superman gave her? I'm enjoying seeing Action Comics come out weekly. It reminds me of the 1990s when DC published four separate Superman titles, and they would come out each week of the month, one after the other, except for months that had 5 weeks, and eventually DC Comics came out with a quarterly title which would fill in those fifth week months. Each issue was like a chapter in an ongoing Superman story, and I have to commend the DC Comics creative staff back then for being able to keep a coherent storyline going among four separate creative teams. The only thing is that it's stretching my comic book budget a little bit, but that's a nice problem to have.
Dr. Mo here with a DC pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Batman Dark Age, number 6. Well, folks, we've reached the conclusion of this 6-issue miniseries that takes place in the world of Superman Space Age, and it just happens to be written and drawn by the Superman Space Age creative team of writer Mark Russell and art by Mike Allred. So if you have been reading Batman Dark Age, you'll know that, yes, while you kind of get the same setup, Batman's rich playboy, he has a traumatic experience, it changes him. Ultimately, he becomes the crime fighter delivering justice. But what has changed, I think, is in Batman Dark Age really is some of the circumstances that led to Bruce's training, what happens when he comes back to Gotham, his relationships with key individuals that are part of the Batman mythos, namely Alfred, Dick Grayson. But what I also like about this series is that it juxtaposes the real world events. So we have Vietnam, and Bruce is aging throughout the series. And we're jumping from a period, certainly when this book initially begins, the late 50s, and we're jumping, progressing up until in 1985, and if you read Superman Space Age, you know why 1985 is important. You will also recall that there is an important character who made a big impact on DC Comics in 1985 that's been appearing throughout Batman Dark Age, was also played a very similar role in Superman Space Age. Now, with the 6th issue, based on the cover, it's clear it's really aligning with the events of the 3rd book of Superman Space Age, which dealt with mid-80s events. We're getting their version of the Justice League. This also did appear in Superman Space Age. We're getting Catwoman appears to be, or at least cover indicates, will be a critical part of this. Selina Kyle has been introduced in the earlier issues of Batman Dark Age, and is sort of been going on a journey just like Bruce, and has been evolving just like Bruce as a character. I think that the larger format lets readers get a bigger chunk of the series, and I think that Mark Russell and Mike Allred really play together. Mike Allred, if you're familiar with Madman, you're familiar with Silver Surfer Run, or his Ecstatic/X-Force title over at Marvel, you'll know that Allred style, it feels like something that definitely belongs in the 60s and 70s, but at the same time, his artwork feels very contemporary. Allred is very good with facial expressions and details and violence, which is a really interesting thing with Mike Allred's artwork. It's cartoony, but at the same time, it can be very visceral. And Mark Russell's his use of cynicism and the things that you're going to get in a Mark Russell written title, the satire and so forth, is very much on full display. I think that this is a series that's worth reading, rereading once it concludes. I'd also recommend that if you haven't read Superman Space Age, you do that. I'm very curious if we're going to get a 3rd part of this, if maybe we'll get something from maybe the Justice League's perspective, or depending on where Dark Age ends, whether or not we'll kind of get a sequel to this, because Superman Space Age planted the seeds of some things at the conclusion that could easily be spun off into another title. I'm really, really fascinated with this world, and I'd like to see more from this creative duo. Batman Dark Age number 6 can be found on page 20 of the digital version of DC Connect. It costs $5.99.
Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 20 with Batman and Robin, Year 1, Number 2, written by Mark Waid, with art and cover by Chris Samney, which is the cover I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Kevin Nolan and Dave Johnson, and I love Kevin Nolan's art. There is also a 1/25 variant cover by Tom Riley. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 20th. Dick Grayson is struggling to adjust to his new life as Bruce Wayne's ward, with both Bruce's rules and Batman's training making his life difficult. But Dick is happy to remind Bruce that turnabout is fair play. Gotham's newest crime boss, the General, continues to vie with Two-Face for control, but could an alliance benefit both of them and spell trouble for Batman and Robin? I'm looking forward to reading this look at the early years of the Batman and Robin team, and I can think of no better comic book writer to chronicle that story but Mark Waid, because of his knowledge of the Silver Age and his ability to take concepts that have been used before and update them for a modern audience. Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on the very next page, number 21, with Batman Superman, World's Finest, number 33, written by Mark Waid and art by Adrian Gutierrez, and I hope I pronounced that name correctly. The main cover is by Dan Mora, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are done by Tom Rainey and Adrian Gutierrez, and a 1/25 variant cover by Marguerite Sauvage, and a Creature Commandos variant cover by Carlos Deandra, as well as a McFarlane Toys variant cover. The cover price of the main edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 20th. Eclipso's reign of terror has brought the Justice League to the brink of civil war, but there must be a way to break the spell. The answer lies within the very power source that allows Superman to race faster than a speeding bullet. It's a battle for Earth's yellow sun in the dramatic conclusion of Darkness Falls. I grew up reading the original World's Finest series back in the 1960s as a kid, and I'm enjoying this new edition of the World's Finest title, especially with Mark Waid as the writer.
This is Jason with a pick in the DC Connect catalog on page 24. It's JSA number 1, written by Jeff Lemire. This is a new series, so it's going to be different from the Geoff Johns series that just ended recently, or will be ending recently, I should say. It says, the new era of the JSA begins here, all in. Longtime fan favorite characters, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, Jade, Obsidian, Jesse Quick, Hourman, Ted Grant, and Sandman are all back on the roster as DC's first super team faces their greatest and most personal challenge yet. Will Golden Age ideals hold true in a world recovering from the events of absolute power, or do they need a more hardcore approach to stand a chance against the new Injustice Society of America? So it seems like an interesting team up that they've got here. It definitely looks like they're using a similar aspect that Geoff Johns used of the legacy characters. So you have some characters that are their original Golden Age forms, and then you have the legacy characters, so the children of the original characters. So Jade and Obsidian are two of my favorite characters that they're bringing in, as well as it looks like they're saying Sandman, but I think it's probably Sandy Hawkins, you know, the what used to be Sandman's partner. But it does look like the original characters of Wildcat, Flash, and Green Lantern, the Golden Age characters, are going to be there. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to pull it together. Jeff Lemire is a great writer. I'm glad that it's an ongoing, not a limited series, and my hope is that they will do justice to the Justice Society of America.
Dr. Mo here with a DC pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's JSA number 1. You heard me right. JSA number 1. And you're probably wondering, what's going on with Geoff Johns's Justice Society of America series, which as of this recording, is on issue number 11 of a 12 issue maxi series. Well, I think that when DC developed this all-in initiative, and clearly there's been a thirst for Justice Society, JSA material, that a decision was made to have a consistent title. Now, that is not to say that Jeff Johns's Justice Society of America series has not been very enjoyable. I certainly have loved it when it comes out. I look forward to it when it comes out. Sometimes, you know, I have to flip back through the previous issue to kind of reset things in my brain. But there's clearly a love and affinity for this property that continues. Henceforth, the decision was made to create a new JSA title. It is going to be written by Jeff Lemire, and Jeff Lemire clearly has a love of this property. If you've looked at his social media pages, his Blue Sky page in particular, he has been posting promo art, covers that he's drawn, covers for subsequent designs. I'm certain he's been getting permission. He's also been posting some interior artwork by the artist Diego Untegi. This artist has worked on JSA material in the past. He's contributed to Jeff Johns's Justice Society of America series. He drew the J. Gart Flash series that started fall of 2023. I think that his style is this interesting sort of blend of Scott Collins's Flash work. And also Scott Collins also did some work on a previous Justice Society of America series as well. And it's this interesting blend of that plus what we've gotten from previous JSA artists, your Leonard Kirchner, Eagle Shams, and so forth. And I think that it tells the story very well, certainly. And again, I'm judging by the artwork that he was doing in the pages of the J. Garrick Flash title and the artwork that he has contributed to the Jeff Johns Justice Society of America series. This new JSA title based on the solicitation text, based on preview and cover art we were getting, is that it's going back, obviously, on one of those core themes of the Justice Society, the notion of older superheroes mentoring the next generation, whether they're blood relations in the case of Jade and Obsidian with Alan Scott, or some of these other characters. We've got the Rick Tyler Hourman, we've got Jesse Quick, the new Dr. Midnight. Again, it's a nice balance of old Infinity Inkers with JSA characters. I think for fans of both franchises, I think you're getting something you've been looking for. JSA number one can be found on page 26 of DC Connect. The regular cover costs $4.99. The variant covers cost $5.99.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect Spotlight. It is The Question, All Along the Watchtower, number one. This is going to be $3.99, 32 pages, written by Alex Segura, and art and cover by Sean Tormey. Now it says here, who watches the Watchtower? In the wake of absolute power, the Justice League Unlimited has created a haven for all heroes, but can they keep it secure? Enter Renee Montoya, reeling from an abrupt end to her time in Gotham, and looking for a place to hang her hat. But the Trinity didn't bring her up to the Watchtower to relax. There's a dark threat bubbling underneath the surface, and only the Question and her ad hoc support team stand a chance of figuring out who the problem is before it's too late. I'm always up for a mystery, and I wanted to call out one of the issues, or one of the new series that might launch out of the All In initiative here, so I'm calling out this one and cautiously optimistic. This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog, this time from page 31. It's a return of maybe the series you didn't ask for last year, but it was fun enough. This is Batman Santa Claus Silent Night Returns, number one. And I'm trying to think. Now, this one doesn't say, but obviously it's going to be a mini series. Solicitation, though, reads, Horrors haunt the Christmas season as life-drained bodies litter the countryside, each marked with a strange symbol. The Justice League responds, "But it's a trap. The heroes are pulled from our world, but not before Batman helps Robin escape. Now Damian Wayne must seek out Zatanna, and the one and only Santa Claus, if there's any hope of saving their friends and family." Santa comes to the aid of the DCU heroes in the crossover event sequel you wished for, and you must have been extra good because a wintry mix of DC's wildest characters arrive this time to face a powerful foe. Dot, dot, dot. The Silent Night. Okay. Again, Batman and Santa Claus, you have to go for it anyway. If you're a ridiculous super fan, there is a scratch and sniff cover that smells like pine trees or something like that. But apart from that, this is $3.99, 32 pages, Batman at Christmas. You gotta pick it up.
Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 34, and it's Gotham by Gaslight, The Kryptonian Age, number 6, the final issue of this miniseries. Written by Andy Diggle, with art and cover by Leandro Fernandez, variant covers by Javier Fernandez and Edwin Galman. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 13th. As threats from the past resurface in his present, Batman must work alongside strange new heroes to save the day, including the steel-hearted sheriff of Smallville, Kansas. The Kryptonian Age may have come to a close, but an age of justice has only just begun. I'll be getting the third issue of this miniseries in my next shipment from Discount Comic Book Service, and I've enjoyed the first two issues very much. The creative team has taken some of the Batman characters that we've known and loved and reimagined them in very clever ways to fit in the turn of the century from the 19th to the 20th centuries, and I can't wait to meet this version of the Man of Steel.
This is Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 37, it's Batman Full Moon number 2. Batman calls for backup against a mythological threat. Caught in a world of magic and myth, Batman must rely on the help of Zatanna and John Constantine if he's to save his city and himself from the curse of the werewolf. But with a full moon approaching, will the ancient magics Bruce's allies manage to summon be enough to keep the beast away from Gotham's most vulnerable? And can the werewolf's human half find the salvation he so longingly desires? So this is an interesting four-issue miniseries with Batman, and I look forward to reading it. I love the idea of Batman facing the supernatural and doing everything he can to overcome it, even though he's obviously, you know, does not have any magic powers, but it looks like he is recruiting some good help with Zatanna and John Constantine. So I do wonder if it says, will he be able to save himself from himself? So I do wonder if maybe he gets bitten or scratched at some point and he's dealing with the curse of the werewolf as well. So anyway, there's so many ways they could go with this series, but definitely recommend this if you like Batman investigating and trying to deal with the supernatural.
Dr. Mo here with the DC pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Milestone Universe, The Shadow Cabinet, number 1. The Milestone Universe, in its new incarnation, continues with its next miniseries, focusing on an old Milestone property, that being the Shadow Cabinet. But it also ties into the events of the Icon versus Hardware miniseries, in which Brainiac, the Superman villain, played a critical role in how the story progressed. So certainly if you're interested in reading a Milestone Universe, The Shadow Cabinet, I strongly, strongly recommend that you go back and read Icon versus Hardware. Based on the cover and the solicitation text, Icon's partner Rocket will take center stage and will be the character that introduces readers into this new incarnation of the Shadow Cabinet.
Now, as I mentioned before, the Shadow Cabinet existed in the 1990s version of the Milestone Universe. It was originally created by Dwayne McDuffie, Robert Washington III, and Jean-Paul Lyon. Now, if memory serves, in the pages of Icon versus Hardware, I believe at least one Shadow Cabinet member has appeared, and Iota was also in the original 1990s version of the Shadow Cabinet. The Shadow Cabinet more or less was the sort of clandestine group of super-powered individuals who sat in the background and kind of were manipulating events for good, at least based on their perceptions of good. I remember one of the most intriguing characters of that group from the 1990s, that is, was the Iron Butterfly. And I think it was a great visual. The character essentially was a knight with wings. The name really did align. I think that was, for me, probably one of the breakthrough characters. I also remember Iota also being a member as well. And as I previously mentioned, this new Milestone Universe, the Shadow Cabinet miniseries, is written by Joseph Illich. Joseph Illich was a Batman / Detective Comics editor during the 1990s. They, I believe, had a Kickstarter and some other current work. They've also written a number of comics editorials over the years. Individuals very accessible on social media as well, and is very hyped about this project. The artwork is provided by a very old hand, one of my favorites from the 1990s when I was growing up, Daryl Banks. Daryl Banks, as you may recall, he worked on Green Lantern, specifically a lot of work involving the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern. More recently, though, Daryl Banks contributed to the 0 Hour 30th Anniversary Special that came out. So if you're a fan of Daryl Banks, I suggest you want to check out their artwork in the pages of that 0 Hour Anniversary issue, and then you check out this Shadow Cabinet miniseries. Based on what I saw in that 0 Hour 30th Anniversary Special, Daryl Banks hasn't lost a step. Artwork looks really crisp, really very much like what you were getting from them 30 years ago. Again, if you're a fan of what DC has been doing with this new iteration of the Milestone Universe, I suggest you pick this up because this is the next chapter. Milestone Universe : The Shadow Cabinet can be found on page 38 of the digital version of DC Connect. This 4-issue miniseries costs $4.99 for all covers.
Billy Hogan again. My last DC Comics pick this month comes on page 38 with Jeannie Sparks number 4 of a 7-issue miniseries written by Tom King with art and cover by Jeff Spokes and a variant cover by Simone DeMeo. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant cover is $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale November 20th. Jeannie tries to negotiate for the release of Captain Atom's hostages after the Justice League falls to his godlike powers. Can the spirit of the 20th century prevail in the 21st, or is the reluctant hero in over her head? I'll be getting the first issue of this miniseries in my next shipment from Discount Comic Book Service. I've read a few stories involving Jeannie Sparks and the Authority, but not as many as I would like, so I'm looking forward to reading her solo miniseries.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the DC Connect, and this time I'm in the back half, or the almost the end of it. It is the DC Collected Editions. It's on page 46 where there's an omnibus. Swamp Thing by Mark Millar and Phil Hester. Omnibus. Written by Mark Millar and art by Phil Hester. Surprise, surprise. I can't tell you a lot about this stuff. I can't tell you why I like it because I never read it. But I'm a big fan of Mark Millar. I think he's a fantastic writer and I do like Phil Hester's art. So it says, the legendary saga of the Swamp Thing comes to a close in this landmark finale. In his quest to abandon misery and claim salvation, a swamp god will rise. Collect Swamp Thing, Volume 2, number 140 through 171, the ending of the classic Vertigo series, along with a brand new introduction and cover by Hester, a brand new afterword by Miller, and an extensive gallery of artwork from the making of this epic. So this one is $125, but you are getting, I have no idea, it doesn't say the page count on here, but you're getting a lot of pages, you're getting a lot of volumes in there, 31. So if you go about 22 pages per, it's only about 700 pages, depending on how much artwork they give you. For 100, oh, actually, right next to the price, 125, 896 pages. So about 900 pages for $125, but I will get half off through Deep Discount Comics. Eric from Cowabunga Comics runs that for us. So if you'd like to pick this up and save some money, reach out to Eric on the Slack channel or send me an email. Let me know. Message me on the Slack. I'll get you in touch with them. But I'm excited to read this. It's the end of the Vertigo series. I never read the beginning, so hopefully it makes sense picking it up at issue number 140, but I'm on board for it. On to my next pick.
This is another pick from the DC Connect catalog, this time back in their collected editions section on page 45. First of two picks here. The first one being DC Finest Aquaman, The King of Atlantis. And these are those trade paperback collections that DC's starting up to mirror what Marvel has with the Epic collections. So the kind of fat book trades, you know, 400, 500 pages, a good 20 issue chunk of early issues for, you know, classic characters, that kind of thing, and then blocked off into these chronological chunks that could stack next to each other. So this one is 624 pages for $39.99. Can't really beat that. Trade paperback. This one's going to be on sale in January, and it is the initial block of Silver Age Aquaman issues. It says here it's marking Aquaman's early Silver Age appearances. The perfect starting point for fans of Arthur Curry's retcon continuity that established him as the ruler of Atlantis and expanded his supporting cast to include Aqualad, Mera, Topo the Octopus, and more. Featuring art by Ramona Fraiden and Nick Carty, which means you can just stop there, buy it for those only, look at the art and enjoy it. It says the King of Atlantis collects stories from Adventure Comics 229 to 280, 282 and 284. Action Comics 272, Detective Comics 293 to 300, World's Finest Comics 125, Showcase 30 through 33, Superman's Girlfriend Lois Lane 12, and Aquaman 1 through 3. Interesting that they have that one from Superman's Girlfriend Lois Lane 12. I feel like that might be one of the issues with Louis L'Amour. I forget what her name was. The girlfriend from Atlantis that Superman had. Anyway, as you can tell, these are a lot of short stories. Aquaman at the time was like a backup feature in all these adventure comics and stuff. So it'll be a bunch of collections of short 3-4 page stories probably and a couple longer ones. And then I will resume here with the next clip from the same page. This is Nick with my next pick from the DC Connect catalog, also from page 45, DC Finest Supergirl, The Girl of Steel. Again, one of these epic collection style books here. Written by Otto Binder and Jerry Siegel, art by Al Plastino, Jim Mooney, and Kurt Swan. A lot of classic Superman creators there. Also $39.99 for 600 pages. This one also on sale in January 2025. Says Kara Zor-El soars into her very own DC Finest collection in The Supergirl from Krypton. Kara lands on Earth and discovers that she possesses all the same powers as her cousin Superman. Inspired by her famous kin, Kara adopts a secret identity and uses her powers to help those in need. This inaugural volume contains Supergirl's appearances from 1959 to 1962 in the pages of Action Comics numbers 252 to 288, Adventure Comics number 278, Superman number 139 to 140 and 144, Superboy 80, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane 14 and 20, and Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, 40, 46, 51, and 57. Check it out.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the main previews catalog, or, if you choose so, a pick from the Image Digital catalog. I know they did the PDF, but I'm looking at the main previews catalog just because I like to hold on to the catalog and read it when I'm recording my clips. And so the image section, I'm on page 147, where they have two gems of the month, and literally they're both by the same writer. There's Peter J. Tomasi is coming out with Hornsby and Halo and the Rockefellers. The one that I want to pick out is Hornsby and Halo number one, written by, once again, Peter J. Tomasi. Art is by Peter Snedberg. All right. I butchered his name. I'm going to read you the solicit because it's a new brand new number one, and then I'll tell you why I'm pointing it out. It's good versus evil versus puberty from the minds of Peter J. Tomasi from Batman and Robin, Super Sons, and Peter Snedberg, whatever his name is, Starman and BPRD. Keeping the cosmic peace isn't easy, but the opposing leaders of heaven and hell broker a deal that trades Zachary Halo, an angel child, to a demon family, and Rose Hornsby, a demon child, to an angel family, and hope this truce will halt their winds of war. It's nature versus nurture as the turbulence of adolescence comes crashing down on two teenagers who have no idea just who or what they truly are. This one is 40 pages for only $3.99, and okay, I'm taking a stab in the dark here. Peter J. Tomasi wrote Super Sons. I loved it. I thought that was kind of like his... He writes these young characters really well. So for those who don't know, Super Sons was a team-up between Damian and John Kent. They were young. They had adventures. They kind of partnered. It was very charming, but not kiddie at the same time to read. It was written for a more mature audience, but you were dealing with the innocence of kids, almost like right before puberty, like 10, 11, 12, something like that. And they had fun adventures. It was just a ton of fun. Then they destroyed the book with the aging up of John Kent, sending him off world. And then he comes back and he's 20 years old and Damian's still, you know, 10. And it just doesn't work. So you can't have that dynamic anymore. And so I'm hoping we get some of that playful stuff in here with the themes of angel kid being raised by the demon family and a demon kid being raised by the angel family. And I like this idea of nature versus nurture. And it just seems like it's going to be a funny book, a fun book. And I'm going to take a stab in the dark. Hope this one's a good one. I'm on board for it. And if it sounds like something you'd like, pick it up. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James with a weird pick, an interesting pick. Over on page 150 in the image section, you got a thing called Von Bode's Complete Deadbone Erotica Omnibus Hardcover by Von Bode. Okay, I have heard of this stuff from back, way back in the day. This stuff came out in the 70s when I was a kid. And this was like the beginning of like the underground comics with an X, you know? And it was a little bit risque. It wasn't like hardcore graphic, but it was a risque comic. I just remember seeing it. It was being reprinted in the 90s and stuff like that. But this stuff has been out of print so long, you cannot pick up a book of this stuff without spending like at least $100 for a used copy. It's insane because it's been out of print forever. So anyways, this Von Bode's Deadbone is coming up, and this is apparently something where you could pick it up, and this may be your one and only chance to get it, because who knows how long it's going to be in print for. It says, collecting for the first time in chronological order, underground comics legend Von Bode's charmingly risque strips and Bode broads from Cavalier magazine, The Kind Men Like, originally written and drawn in the 1970s. This volume represents a time capsule and erotic humor as only a master of the form could create it. This beautiful hardbound book also collects Bode's hard-to-find three-page strips and other rarities, with a forward and additional new art from Von's son, Mark Bode. Wow, interesting. His son's an artist. It says, underground comics enthusiasts, Bode aficionados, and fans of adult humor won't want to miss this uncensored and digitally remastered omnibus. Mature themes, 272 pages, $39.99, but you will definitely get a discount from Eric over at Deep Discount Comics. This is just something very rare. I think this is something you can pick up now, and you may see printed again 20, 30 years from now. That's how rare this stuff comes out. The last volume of this stuff that came out was probably in the early 90s. So pick it up or don't. On to my next pick.
Billy Hogan again. My first Image Comics pick comes on page 154 of the main previews catalog with Geiger number 8, written by Jeff Johns with art by Paul Pelletier, Drew Hennessy, and Brad Anderson. The main cover is by Gary Frank and Brad Anderson, with a variant cover by Derek Chu and another by Leonardo Calapietro, and I hope I pronounced that name correctly. The glowing man's quest for a cure continues as Geiger, his two-headed wolf Barney, and Nate the Nuclear Knight encounter a town that's discovered the secret to peace in this post-nuclear war world. But that tranquility is threatened with the arrival of Nate's former brothers-in-arms from the Camelot Casino and their formidable leader, the new king. Plus, how violent can the glowing man get when a child who reminds him of his own daughter is under threat? Read this face-meltingly good issue to find out. This issue is scheduled to be in shops on November 13th for the cover price of $3.99. Geiger is a great science fiction post-nuclear apocalyptic series from Image, and I'll be getting every issue as long as Jeff Johns and his art team continue to create issues. Billy Hogan again. My final Image Comics pick is on page 156 with Lady Mechanica, Devil in the Lake, number 3 of a 4-issue miniseries. Written by Joe Benitez and M.M. Chin, with art by Saya The main cover is by Joe Benitez, which is the one I'll be getting because I enjoy his art very much. And Saya has done the variant cover. Lady Mechanica journeys down into the depths of a mysterious lake in search of the ancient creature known as Labankriski Chiort, and I hope I pronounced that name correctly, the Devil in the Lake. In shops November 13th for the cover price of $3.99. If you're a big fan of steampunk, I would recommend collecting this miniseries as well as any of the past trade paperbacks of Lady Mechanica's stories.
Brawlinator again, and I'm now in the previews catalog on page 235 looking at the Best of DC War Artist Edition. This is an oversized new printing of the classic collection featuring some of the finest war comics ever produced by DC Comics. You got illustrators and top artists like, of course, Kirby, Heath, Kubert, Severin, and Toth. Alex Toth, in particular, gets featured heavily in this. This is a spectacular artist edition, which includes a pretty impressive selection of stories by those artists showcasing their exceptional war art. And I say this is oversized. It's 12 by 17, and it does include a few complete stories along with several individual pages scanned from the original artwork and reproduced to those high standards that have earned IDW numerous Eisner Awards for this artist edition series. That's really the best thing IDW is doing these days. And this is a reprint. So this incredible meaning when I say reprint, I mean they've put this out before. So this is a new printing of this artist edition. These collections, I think, offer fans of the classic DC War comics a great opportunity to experience these pages in their original pre-published sizes, highlighting the meticulous attention to detail, blemishes, scotch tape, whiteout, you name it. So if you're a fan of these artist editions and you don't already have this, I do recommend it. If you love war comics of the era, then you may want to get this too. It's found over on page 235 of this month's previews. It's the Best of DC War Artist Edition.
Hey, this is James back with a pick from the Marvel previews. And I open it up and the first thing in the Marvel previews is on pages 2 and 3 where it's Amazing Spider-Man. Issue 61 and 62. Why am I calling out issues 61 and 62? And why are they getting highlighted in the beginning of the Marvel previews? Well, they finally sent Zeb Wells out to pasture. His run has ended, and it was not a good run. It was not enjoyable. And so I am going to give Joe Kelly is the new writer, and Ed McGuinness is the artist. I've seen Ed McGuinness do Spider-Man art tons of times. Joe Kelly, you know, he's famous for Deadpool, some other things, but I'll see how this run goes. It starts off with an arc called The Eight Deaths of Spider-Man. You're getting issues 61 and 62 solicited here. And I'm jumping on board because I'm a Spider-Man fan and I'm hoping this is a good run. The last one was bad. The same thing happened to me with Nightwing. I was reading it. They shot him in the head. He got amnesia. I dropped the book when it went to a team book. It got really weird for me. He was Rick Grayson, and there was a whole team of Nightwings. I was like, ah, this is not working for me. But then when Tom Taylor came on much, much later, I picked up the book again. So once again, doing the same type of thing I did before. It's not being resolicited as issue number one, which I like. It's just a new creative team. I'm picking it up, and I'll jump on board. And if it's not good, I will be back off onto my next pick. Hey, this is James here with a second pick from the Marvel previews. And I'm over on page 4, where I'm curious if this will be in the catalog or not, because it has one of those red little tags, order using with a number. So it may have been on a previous order form, but it's finally coming out in the catalog. So here we go. Alien vs. Avengers number 2 of 4. I will be talking about this when John and I do the monthly comic spotlight issue number 1, which I did read at the time of this recording. But because of a shortened preview cycle last time, if this was in last month's catalog and my memory's just not there, I probably didn't highlight it. I probably didn't call it out because of just timing. Marvel was very late getting their previews catalog, their digital one up, and we were trying to get the clips in early to John. So I did want to say that I did enjoy issue number 1. That's all I'm going to say about it right now. The creative team is Jonathan Hickman is the writer, Issad Ribic is the artist. If you've ever seen Issad Ribic, he has a very distinct art style, and it is beautiful. And for whatever reasons, I think Issad does his own coloring, I swear, because I don't see a color artist here, but he tends to do his art in blue hues. His art is beautiful, but at the same time, it's always a little bit cold just because of the palette that he uses. But I like it. It's his style. It works for me, and I'm here for it. This, I will tell you, is kind of an Elseworlds tale that takes place in the very far future. What I mean by that is some of your characters are aged, some of your characters are not the same as what you would expect. So go into this knowing that this is a futuristic tale, probably Elseworlds, a what-if story, we'll say, with aliens taking on the Avengers, and the setup for it in issue 1 was fantastic. Issue 1 was an expensive comic. It was $7.99, but it was thick. It took a long time to read it. And this is the same thing. You're getting 40 pages at $7.99. But even though the steep price, it's well worth it. And I'm getting a 40% discount from Deep Discount Comics. So keep that in mind. But just wanted to point this out. Pick it up. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James here with another pick in the Marvel previews. And this time I'm on page number 6. Where we're getting a new West Coast Avengers title. This one's written by Jerry Duggan or Dugan. I don't know if it's Duggan or Dugan. And the artist is Danny Kim. And this is a team that looks like it's pretty small. Just looking at the pictures, it's War Machine, Iron Man, Spider-Woman, and actually here in the solicit it says Firestar. I was looking at her thinking it was the Phoenix at first. I was like, is that Jean Grey? Because I see the red hair and I see the flames coming off her. But it is Firestar. Okay. It says, Ultron returns, redeemed. Ultron looks like he's part of the West Coast Avengers with these other four, which makes no sense to me. I don't know. I'll have to read you the solicit so you can decide for yourself. It says, Iron Man and War Machine have put together a new team of Avengers, one that includes villains seeking a path to redemption. Their case study, Ultron, who against all odds seems to be walking the straight and narrow. I guess he has been reprogrammed because he is an artificial intelligence, for now. But does the success of one guarantee the success of all? Spider-Woman and Firestar have their doubts, and can any amount of heroics really absolve Ultron of his past? I would say no. The thing that makes comics heroes, and what makes certain heroes really popular is their rogues gallery. And I don't think you're going to take a rogue long-term and turn them into a good guy. Just me, I think Ultron will be good for a while, and then he'll be back as a bad guy. $4.99, get your 40% off of our Deep Discount Comics. But a new West Coast Avengers, I'm going to probably pick it up and check it out, see if it works for me. On to my next pick.
This is Jason with my first pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 11. It's Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu number 2, The Midnight Mission Reunited. After the biggest surprise comic of the summer, Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu number 0, A new era has taken shape in the Midnight Mission, but what new threats and foes are waiting for the reborn Mark Spector? So, I have to go over again the Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu Zero, which was the beginning of this series, technically. It was a surprise comic, and it did surprise me that I didn't find out about it till about a month later when I happened to read a post by Jed McKay talking about this issue. And I was like, I looked back over all my last several months of Marvel previews catalogs, and I didn't see anything about Fist of Khonshu number zero. And I was pretty disappointed when I found out it released on July 3rd and was a so-called surprise release. And I found out about a month later. So that was interesting. I was very fortunate that my comic shop did see that surprise comic and ordered multiple, so I was able to still get a copy. But I was very surprised if they're trying to get people to jump on to a series like this. You know, Moon Knight's one of my favorite characters, but I know, you know, street level character is not everybody's thing, and he's got his own mythology and, you know, mythos that some people might like, some people might not. But yeah, if you're wanting people to jump onto the series, I just figured it would be highly publicized that, you know, hey, this is a zero issue, a great jumping on point, but they decided to not go that direction. So on the other side, I do really enjoy Jed McKay's run on Moon Knight. And so the original Moon Knight run was 30 issues. And then obviously at the end of it, when Mark Spector died, they ended up doing Vengeance of Moon Knight, which is 9 issues. And then they were picked up right after that with Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu series 0 and 1 and now issue 2. So I did like, even though I wish it was just one series, just Moon Knight and just continue the numbering, I do like the storyline of switching it up where you slowly gather the Midnight Mission characters helping Moon Knight and they become part of the team. And then you take Moon Knight out of the equation and then you just see how these characters hold up without him while trying to hold up his ideals of protecting the people who travel by night, so the innocents who travel by night. So now, obviously, he is back, and things are going to be a little bit different, I'm sure, but it looks like it's kind of getting the band back together in this issue, and so I'm really excited to see what direction he takes it. I'm glad that basically the same writer, Jed McKay, and the same artist, Alessandro Capuccio, are both still on it. So I look forward to seeing, you know, them continuing this series. I hope they continue for many more issues to come, and hopefully it's a Moon Knight era that'll go down as one of the best ever. This is Jason with my next pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 56. It's Phases of the Moon Knight, issue 4 of 4, the final phase. Through this entire series, you've seen multitudes of Moon Knights exact Khonshu's vision of justice across the ages. In this final issue, behold the Moon God himself playing a part in one of the phases of the Moon Knight for the very first time. But what part is there for a mighty and mysterious God of the Moon? And could it perhaps set the stage for the future of the Marvel Universe? So I've only gotten the first issue of this miniseries so far. And as much as I like Mark Spector's Moon Knight, and they have highlighted him in this series so far, I do like when they, because with the character, the legacy of the character is there's been several Moon Knights over the, you know, centuries. And so I like the idea of exploring the possibilities of the other characters who've taken on the mantle of Moon Knight. What's interesting about this issue is, you know, the Khonshu character, the god Khonshu, is typically shrouded in mystery. You get little snippets of his characterization over time and him speaking and all of that. But for the most part, he's a background character. You hardly ever see or hear from him. He does have his moments, and I think he did have some appearances recently with the Moon Knight series, but overall, you don't really hear from him or get his story or see him in action much. So I look forward to checking this out. I'm curious what direction they'll take this, and I don't know if it does have, you know, anything for the future, but it would be kind of interesting if they were able to do that. So recommend this if you're a Moon Knight fan.
Hey everyone, Chris Brawley here, known as the Brawlinator on the forums and the Slack channel, and I've got my picks for September 2024, and right out of the gate, I'm in the Marvel Previews section. Over on page 90 of Marvel Previews, I'm looking at a collected trade of a really fun series that Marvel had just put out. It's Get Fury, a gritty, violent war story set back in 1971 in Vietnam, and it focuses on Captain Frank Castle, a.k.a. Pre-The Punisher. He's on a mission to kill a kidnapped Nick Fury, before Fury's captors can extract sensitive intel through torturing him. This is written by Garth Ennis, and he delivers a mature, unpolished narrative that captures the harsh realities of war. The artwork by Jason Burroughs and Guillermo Ortego, I think, really makes the story's intense, gruesome elements come to life. It makes it a raw, authentic war comic without what some people say is the Disneyfication of most mainstream Marvel titles these days. This is not for everyone. It's not jokey. And I get it if it's not for you, but if you like these characters and you like war stories, then I think you should check it out. It's on page 90 of Marvel Previews. It's Get Fury, the trade paperback.
This is Jason with my last pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 91. It's Vengeance of the Moon Knight, Volume 2. It's Alive. The Midnight Mission has a key role to play in Blood Hunt. For the new and vengeful Moon Knight, taking Mark Spector's name isn't enough. Now he will turn his sights and fists on everything Mark held dear in life. But will Hunter's Moon and Tiger unmask their foe before the Marvel Universe is overrun by vampires? With more chaos on their streets than ever before and no tested leader to show them the way, the Midnight Mission must fight to save New York and its people. The clock is ticking, the odds are against them, and the vampiric stakes have never been higher. But will they succeed in their boldest offensive yet? The entire Earth's future just might depend on it. And when the Blood Hunt is over, what will remain of the mission? Collecting Vengeance of the Moon Knight, issues 5-9. So that collection finishes that series, which only lasted 9 issues, and it just had the saga of what happened to the Midnight Mission that Moon Knight had formed with an entourage of characters. Basically, how do they hold up without him? I was a bit disappointed that Blood Hunt basically popped up right in the middle of it, because I did think it changed quite a bit of things, but I do understand why they did it. I mean, obviously, Jed McKay was the main writer in Blood Hunt, so I should not have been surprised that he connected it so heavily in the Vengeance of the Moon Knight series, and it definitely has some repercussions when they did that. So I definitely recommend this if you have been enjoying the Jed McKay Moon Knight run that lasted 30 issues. This completes the second volume of the trade paperback collecting the Vengeance of the Moon Knight series. So definitely check this one out.
My next pick is on page 103 of the Marvel Previews, and it's the Excluded Items. And for me, that's an X-Cluded, because, you know, it's Marvel, it's X-joke, whatever. But not many of them are actually X-titles, but a few of them are. But if you look on page 103, which is the Marvel checklist, they've got a bunch of things that are going to be on sale that first week of December. Avengers 21, Avengers Assemble 4, Conquest 2099 number 4, Deadpool Wolverine Weapon Extraction number 1, Infinity Watch number 1, Marvel Holiday Tales to Astonish number 1, Marvel Zombies Dawn of Decay number 4, Miles Morales Spider-Man number 27, NYX number 6, Spider-Gwen the Ghost Spider number 8, Spidey and His Amazing Friends number 2, Star Wars Battle of Jakku Republic Under Siege number 3, Ultimates number 7, Werewolf by Night, Red Band number 5, polybagged. Wolverine number 4, X-Force number 6, and X-Men number 8. Plus, there's a few others hidden a little further below, like All New Venom number 1, Laura Kinney Wolverine number 1, and Helverine number 1. And all of these are things that I'm pretty sure aren't going to be in the order form this time, because they're for next month, and well, Marvel can't coordinate their catalog in their order form. So, there's a lot of things I suspect people are going to be interested in here that you could very easily miss if you're just looking for what's in the Marvel Previews catalog, or if you're looking at the order form. So again, be aware of these excluded items and order accordingly. Next up on page 38 of the Previews catalog is Power Rangers Prime number 1 from Boom Studios. We've got Melissa Flores on writing. She's been the one who was on the Power Ranger title up until it ended with the Darkest Hour, I think it was, arc. It was pretty good. Not as good as Shattered Grid, but solid. And we're getting a new cast of characters. It seems like it's going to be almost like an Ultimates take on Power Rangers, possibly. And I'm not quite sure what's up, because the costume on the main cover seems to be a modified version of the Mighty Morphin. But then the next page shows an image that seems to be more of a Ninja Steel kind of revised costume or something. So I don't know if we're going to have different teams of Rangers going on, if they're going to be literally like an ultimate version of different Power Ranger teams or what? Because it's a little vague. It mentions that we've got College Grove University students versus high school students. And either way, it should be kind of interesting. And this may be its own little pocket continuity up until whatever happens with Power Rangers happens. Either way, should be a fun jumping on point. And it's an all-new ongoing series, so that's going to be cool. Hopefully with some new Rangers, some fun stuff here. So once again, that's Power Rangers Prime number 1 on page 38 of the Diamond Previews.
Brawlinator again, and now on page 57 in the main previews catalog in the Boom Studios section. And if you like conspiracy theory movies, then Deep State may be the political science fiction comic book thriller for you. It's the complete Deep State series, and it comes from Boom Studios, as I said. It blends elements of The X-Files and Men in Black with a hefty helping of Oliver Stone's JFK movie. The artist is Ariella Cristantina, and is colored by Ben Wilsonham, and I think it works well by effectively setting the mood for the story. The series follows agents John Harrow and Agent Branch as they work to keep the government secret hidden from the public, delving into topics such as the assassination of JFK, MKUltra, and advanced military technology. This is the complete series, written by Justin Jordan, and as I said, collects issues 1 through 8, and it's solicited for the very first time over on page 57 of the previews catalog, Deep State, the complete collection.
This is Jason with my first pick in the Diamond Previews catalog on page 77. It's from Dynamite Comics, The Green Hornet, Miss Fury, number 1. The solicit says when Marla Drake and Britt Reed meet, sparks fly, and it's not just because of the bullets ricocheting around them. As their alter egos, Miss Fury and the Green Hornet, the two vigilantes have two very different styles of crime fighting. But when they both turn up to investigate the murder of their beloved professor, Javier Mercado, they soon discover they have more in common than they realized. Mercado was a mentor to both of them at different times, back when he too led a double life as the Silver Shrike. With each having a personal stake in finding Mercado's killer, Drake and Reed must learn how to work together to solve the case if they don't want to end up sabotaging each other's efforts. But there's another, even more compelling reason to join forces. Whoever killed the Silver Shrike is going after other heroes, past and present. And at the top of that list are Miss Fury and the Green Hornet. So the artist is Federico Soressa, and the writer is Alex Segura, who just recently was finishing up his run on the Dick Tracy series from Mad Cave Comics. And so I think he's very good at doing noir-type series, that type of tradition where it's set back in a particular time, whether it's the 30s or the 40s, or even in this case, there's an article on the next couple of pages that looks like on page 78 and 79 of the Diamond Previews catalog. And it looks like with this one, what they're doing is they're making it set in the 1960s. So it's kind of a Silver Age type of series in terms of the timing and the set. But these characters are interesting in that they were both introduced, you know, years ago. They're Golden Age characters. The Green Hornet was actually, in my opinion, was modeled after the Shadow. And he came out in the radio initially, I think in 1936, and then eventually over to comic books in 1940. And he's had multiple appearances in multimedia serials, comics, movies over the years. Miss Fury is a little bit more of an obscure character. She initially came out in 1941, written by a female writer. Her name was June Tarp Mills. And pretty interesting, the newspaper strip lasted a little bit of a time and was fairly popular, actually, and had a little bit of controversy because of the skin-tight suit that she wears, which is definitely reminiscent these days of Catwoman, you know, kind of a predecessor to her. But it is very good. I do like they're doing like an old-fashioned noir murder mystery, the detective and the vigilante kind of getting together, figuring it out. I like how they have a common person that's helped both of them, mentor both of them they're looking for. I do like the way that he's able to make this series feel fresh as well as a timeless series that anybody who has enjoyed either one of these characters could jump on. So I highly recommend this if you've been enjoying the Dick Tracy series. Like I said, there's a nice little question and answer section in the next couple of pages after the solicit. It looks like it'll probably be a miniseries. I'm not 100% sure. They usually don't announce it. It'll just tell you, you know, whenever it's about to conclude that this is the final issue. So I'm assuming 5 or 6 issues, but I look forward to checking out this fun noir team up of two Golden Age characters. This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 89 from Dynamite Comics. It's Johnny Quest, number 4. It says, Johnny Quest and Haji have both been kidnapped, and the Quest family is naturally going to do whatever it takes to find them. But while locating the youngest members of their ad hoc expeditionary force might be a challenge, it's nothing compared to what breaking them out of captivity is going to take. International Men of Mystery, Joe Casey and Sebastian Perez, continue to chart their journey into the unknown with Johnny Quest number 4, multiple covers. So I've basically just been getting the A cover of all of these. I wanted to continue to highlight this series. It's something that I didn't know I wanted until it popped up. I very much enjoyed the free comic book day preview, which had a few pages. And I just recently read the Johnny Quest issue 1, and it just definitely falls in line with that 1964 series where they get the dialogue right. They get the characters' interactions and relationships correct. They're able to do the little funny moments with Bandit the dog, as well as Dr. Quest talking with Race. And they were able to get in these great moments of mystery and this unraveling mystery that you're trying to figure out along with the characters, as well as having these moments of intense action and basically near-death scenes that they always pull it out by the end. So I definitely recommend this series. It's something I was hoping for a long time, and I certainly have enjoyed it. So the interesting thing is, that last thing I wanted to point out was, and I know Dynamite is famous for doing lots of covers, and I only saw a few covers, maybe A, B, and C. Maybe it was D as well, but just a few covers that were highlighted in the previews catalog, but I did not realize they had done so many. So in the back of issue 1, there literally is from cover A all the way to cover Z, and then they have ZA, ZB, ZC, and ZD. So I think that's 30 covers, something like that. So for me, I just get pretty much the main cover, and I just want to enjoy the comic and the story. So I'm really glad with what Joe Casey is doing here. He's keeping the legacy of the characters very much together. It feels like this could be an episode of the cartoon series, but it's very well done. So I highly recommend this if you're a Hanna-Barbera fan and enjoyed that series back in 1964. Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog, and it's on page 102, even though I'll probably be getting the cover on page 103. It's Space Ghost Volume 1 with Only Ghosts to Comfort Us. Greed and corruption flourish in the emptiness between the stars. With the territories of the Galactic Federation spread far and wide across the vastness of space, pirates and hijackers ransack the distant colonies with cruel disregard for the innocent scientists living with them. Yet there is one man who metes out justice throughout the galaxy and brings vengeance to those who prey upon the defenseless. Some say he is a policeman who has abandoned the strictures of the law. Others say he is a phantom, the sole survivor of a war-torn planet. And those who have survived his wrath claim he is more a force of nature, able to bend the very elements of creation to decimate his enemies. They call him the Space Ghost, and his adventures begin here. So this has been a very fun series as well, also based on a cartoon character and series from the 60s. I do like what David Pepos is doing with the character, all of the characters in there. We're getting good backgrounds, and you feel like the characters have become much more than the one-dimensional characters that they are on the TV show. You never really find out a whole lot about Space Ghost, his background and origin story, and even the twins. You know, you don't really get much about them and Bippo the monkey that's with them. But this series does a great job of actually delving into their origin stories. How do they find each other? How are they work together to form a team? So it does feel like it could be set back during that time. And Space Ghost is just a very interesting character, and his power set is pretty enormous. And so there's not much he can't do. But anyway, I highly recommend this if you are a fan of Hanna-Barbera cartoons. If you remember that Space Ghost series, it's a great science fiction series to check out. This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 122. It's Conan the Barbarian, number 17, the ongoing series. This, it looks like it's a new story arc. It says a new Conan the Barbarian arc begins. Conan the Cimmerian and Belit, pirate queen of the Black Coast, are in their prime, enjoying a life of decadence and debauchery. But a flagrant flash of wealth brings unwelcome attention from thieves with a taste for danger and agents from Stygia on a dark mission for their serpent god. So this looks like a new story arc. Jim Zub continues to be at the helm of Conan the Barbarian. And it is kind of neat how they're doing this. So the interview with Jim Zub, thank you, Chris Myers, for posting that Fan Expo panel on Stygian Dogs channel. But thank you for posting that interview with Jim Zub because it had a lot of good material in it. But I like how they're using the original Robert E. Howard stories as pillars. They're not retelling the same stories, but they're referencing them and they're happening either during them or right after them. And so they're using them like as pillars, but not necessarily, they're not just retelling the same thing. So I really have enjoyed Jim Zub's run on Conan. And another thing from that panel, which is really nice to hear, is that he has at least a 4-year run where he is not exclusive, but he's able to stay on the Conan the Barbarian title. So he's going to be around for at least 50 issues. So it's awesome to have that continuity like we used to have with Roy Thomas and different authors having these long runs on characters. So I really enjoy that. Having a story occur during the Belit storyline is interesting because I mean, she's definitely what I would consider his true love, his soulmate. But I felt like the story with her, at least the original Robert E. Howard story, was fairly short, even though the Marvel Comics run, they went quite a ways with their saga. So I'm glad they're expanding that, those adventures. And I look forward to seeing how this new story arc is going to go. So if you are a Conan fan, Jim Zub fan, fantasy character, I think this particular one is a great one to pick up. You can't go wrong with Roberto De La Torre art, and the stories just keep making one hit after the next. Highly recommend this series.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the main previews catalog. And I will say this month's pickings have been slim, and the reason why, this is the catalog that's coming out September. So I believe the stuff being solicited is December. And usually the December and January catalogs are pretty, and sometimes even the February, slim pickings because everyone's focused on the holidays. But I did find some gems in here. And one of them is on page 122. I skipped through the Boom and Dynamite and all that stuff. I'm in the Titan section, and I'm looking at Conan the Barbarian number 17. Writer Jim Zub, artist Danica Bryan, and Joao Canola, which sounds like, Joao, that sounds like a Brazilian name, so Brazilian artist, so I'm guessing, or co-artist, Danica, no clue. They have Roberto De La Torre doing the cover art again, beautiful, beautiful stuff, and the reason why I'm pointing this one out, and it literally is a gem of the month, it's saying number 17, it's ongoing, it's a gem of the month, because a new Conan the Barbarian arc begins, and it says, in the big black area, Conan the Cimmerian and Belit, the pirate queen of the Black Coast, are in their prime, enjoying a life of decadence and debauchery, but a flagrant flash of wealth brings unwelcome attention from thieves with a taste for danger and agents of Stygia on a dark mission for their serpent god. Okay, Conan, I like Conan as an individual solo character. I really do. I just like seeing him on adventures. I love seeing him as a king. Those are my probably, you know, we know Conan as young Conan, you know Conan as thief Conan, you know Conan as general Conan, you know Conan as king Conan. But I would say there's a fifth Conan too. The fifth Conan is the Conan who's kind of like the lover Conan when he's with a lady. He's a ladies man Conan, where he's with Red Sonja, or he's with Belit, or he's with Brissa at the beginning of the Jim Zub run. And there's runs where they pair him up. He's always teamed up with a lady who, the lady is tough for her own rights. She's beautiful to look at. She's sultry, sexy, everything that womanhood brings, but at the same time knows how to wield a sword and can almost stand up for her own against or with Conan. So I like that. And Conan tends to, he is women galore throughout this world, but he tends to have his best interactions with the gentler sex when they're actually a little tough too. And, you know, they can stand up to him. And so I kind of like this. We're going back to Belit before she passed away. Anyone who's a Conan fan, that's not a spoiler. This stuff happened 30-some-odd years ago, but I'm on board for it. The other thing that I was going to tell you is if you're not in the book club, join the book club, because we discussed Chris Myers, one of our book club members. He went to Fan Expo up in Toronto. He got to meet Jim Zub, or he went to a panel and heard Jim Zub. I'm sorry. He met all the people from Ghost Machine, which was cool as heck. He went to dinner with them and actually talked with them and took some pictures with them. But with Jim Zub, they were talking about him, his 5-year plans to write Conan. And that just made me very happy, because that tells you you're probably going to be getting at least 60 issues of this run. So Titan went into it not with a short plan, you know, something where they're going to do 10, 15, 20 issues and then restart it at number one. Something that Dynamite has done with Red Sonja, rinse and repeat, something that happens all the time. So it just makes me a little bit happy that we're seeing some commitment to the property and the license there. And I'm on board for this. It looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. And on to my next pick.
This is Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 125 from Titan Comics. It's Conan the Barbarian, Cult of the Obsidian Moon. Now, this is a novel. It's a hardcover that comes out in November for $28. It says tie-in novel to the comic event, The Battle of the Black Stone, from New York Times bestselling author James Lovegrove. Still mourning Belit and flush with gold after a heist, Conan attempts to drink away his sorrows. In his tavern-hopping journey, he meets and befriends married couple Hunwolf and Gudrun and their son Bjorn. A decade ago, Hunwolf eloped with Gudrun after killing her betrothed. They live on the run from her tribe, who are desperate for revenge. A new chapter of the Heroic Signatures and Titan Comics massive narrative event, The Battle of the Black Stone. So, and I guess at the bottom too, they also have a couple of more. One's a novel, the other one's a novelization. Conan, City of the Dead, novel that was just recently solicited. And then Conan the Barbarian, the official motion picture adaptation. So that's like, you know, somebody writes the story in a book form of the novel, which is really nice. So I've been reading, they have these short, I'm not sure what it would come out to, because they're coming out like on Amazon, they're digital ebooks, but they're little, basically short stories. So they'll be between, I don't know, 20 and 30 pages long, maybe. Some maybe a little shorter than that. So they're little short stories of Conan. Now, and they have released some novels as well. They had Conan, Blood of the Serpent. It came out a few years ago. And then recently, City of the Dead, which actually has two stories or two novels inside of it. And then this one, Cult of the Obsidian Moon. So it is interesting how everything seems to be correlating with this Black Stone narrative, which has lasted over the course of the first year of Conan comics, and now spilling over into Conan the Barbarian, Battle of the Black Stone miniseries, spilling over into Savage Sword. And then apparently there's a novel that relates to it as well. So personally, I typically wait until they come out with the mass market paperback edition, just because most of my Conan books are paperbacks. And so I guess for uniformity, I lean towards that. Even though I think I did check out a hardcover Conan book from the library, a novel, and it is pretty nice, hardcover versus softcover. But you save about 10, 12 bucks with that, but you get the same story. So I definitely recommend this if you guys are into reading novels. I've been trying to get more back into reading again like I used to, actual narratives versus, you know, watching videos and TV and stuff like that. So, but I definitely recommend this if you want to sit back and kind of get in a little more deeper into Conan lore and see how this relates to the Black Stone saga. Jason again, and I can't seem to get out of the Titan section again, I guess because they're releasing all this great Conan stuff. So it's a great time, I think, to be a Robert E. Howard fan, especially a Conan fan. On page 126, it's King Conan, the Original Comics Omnibus Volume 2. It's going to be released in March, and it's $125. It says, believing his favorite son, Khan, to be dead after a reckless campaign in the treacherous region of Gunderland, Conan sets out with his elite squad, the Black Dragons, determined to retrieve his son's body. But Khan is very much alive, and his perilous journey back to his father unfolds alongside Conan's desperate quest. Collecting Conan the King, issues 20 through 35. It was called King Conan, and then when they started the series in 1980, and then they ended up switching it, I'm not sure exactly what issue, but they switched it to Conan the King, I guess, so that way you would have Conan the Barbarian, Conan the King, so it'd be a little easier to keep together. But yeah, it says Conan the Barbarian, the Thief, the Mercenary, and now Conan the King. So the good news about this series is that whereas the Conan the Barbarian series, it was kind of a narrative, but also it did jump around a little bit in his life, especially in the later years. Whereas this one, Conan the King, it is later in his life after he does become the King of Aquilonia. And it talks about his family, his sons, and things like that. So you get to see Conan in a little bit of a different light. And like I said, this was basically the height of Conan comics, in my opinion. This early 80s to mid 80s was kind of the peak, I guess you could say that, where you had this series, he had Conan the Barbarian, Savage Sword of Conan going on, and all very much doing well. So I actually have volume one from Marvel that was released. And so I will probably just be getting volume two by Titan and just keeping my Marvel book since I've already bought it. But if you haven't had a chance, you know, they just solicited King Conan volume one last month and now King Conan volume two for this month. So it's a great chance to go back and collect all that classic Conan material.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Titan section. I'm over on page 126, where we get another gem, King Conan, the original comics omnibus, volume 2. And you guys who were collecting the Marvel Omnibuy know that we got King Conan, the original Marvel comics omnibus, volume 1. We did not get volume 2. So volume 2 is being printed by Titan, and this is the first time this material is being printed in omnibus format. It should have the same dimensions, the same type of layout as Conan, should match up somewhat nicely on the bookshelf to complete our Conan omnibus runs. And like I have said, way back years ago when Marvel had the license and they were reprinting everything in omnibus format, King Conan was one of my favorite things, you know, seeing him lead armies and fighting battles. And in the interior pages over here on the right on page 127, once again, you can see him riding the horses fighting. It looks like a Pictish army. Just cool stuff. I liked seeing him as a leader. I thought that was really cool because you always saw these big battlefields with sometimes the soldiers would almost look like centurions from the Roman armies with the little horsehair mane going down the middle of the helmet and just seeing them all fighting. And I just stare at the art for days on end. Okay, so volume two, writer Alan Zelentz and Don Krar. Okay, artist Mark Silvestri. We've all heard that name. Mike Doherty, Judith Hunt, Jeff Isherwood, and Mike Manley are all doing the art here. This is 688 pages for $125, but I think on Titan you only get 35% off, but it's a discount from Deep Discount Comics. I'm picking this up, and it literally says in here in green, new omnibus. You guys cannot miss this. This is new material. Here in the solicit in the main page, well, once again, they give you interior art pages to show you kind of what it looks like. It says, believing his favorite son, Khan, to be dead after a reckless campaign in the treacherous region of Gunderland, Conan sets out with his elite squad, the Black Dragons, determined to retrieve his son's body. But Khan, and I don't know if you guys remember that, I remember reading about Khan, Conan's son, but Khan is very much alive, and his perilous journey back to his father unfolds alongside Conan's desperate quest. Collecting Conan the King from 1984, number 20 through 35, and previously King Conan 1980. Very cool. I'm on board for this. I think this is going to be fantastic. We got to finish our omnibus runs, and this is grade A material. I'm on board for it. On to my next pick.
Brawlinator again, and this is one I've been waiting for going on a few years now. After Marvel Comics dropped the ball with their Conan comic reprints, I was delighted to learn that Titan Comics had picked up the license and was going to resume those omnibus editions, including the King Conan title, which Marvel only got like through about a third of. So this was a different era of Conan, when he had finally ascended to the throne. And in this second volume of Conan the King, King Conan believes his son, who is named Conn, C-O-N-N, he believes his son to be dead after a reckless campaign, and so he sets out with his elite squad, the Black Dragons, to retrieve his son's body. Meanwhile, Conn is very much alive, and his perilous journey back to his father and mother unfolds alongside Conan's desperate quest. It's a really great and really mature era. I don't think this was an adaptation of any Robert E. Howard story that I know of. And this volume actually marks a major turning point in Conan's kingly career, because he also abdicates the throne of Aquilonia when he hears news of his son's death so that he can go on this quest. What's also noteworthy is when the original series, which launched in 1980 as King Conan, this is when, I think in 1984, around issue 20, when it changed the title to Conan the King. I think this is a must-have for fans of the sword-wielding barbarian, particularly if you have the first volume or have it on order, because Titan also resolicited it a month or two ago. But check this out. It's on page 127 in the previews. Didn't want my Conan fans to miss out on this.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 142, also from Titan Comics. It's Marvel's Wolverine, the first 50 years. Now, they're probably releasing this due to the Deadpool and Wolverine movie, at least in terms of the timing. But these first, they call it the first blank years. So first 50 years, first 30 years, like they're highlighting the Deadpool one, Marvel's Deadpool, the first 30 years. They do this for several of the characters. But this one, I know there's a lot of Wolverine fans out there. So if you're ever looking at a concise and general history of the character, including like his most iconic moments and fights and plot points, this is a great way to get it done and without too expensive of a price point. It says a celebration of 50 years of Marvel's premier tough guy, Wolverine. This book explores the comic book history of Wolverine, looking in depth at his greatest battles, deadliest enemies, and his unlikeliest allies. Lavishly illustrated with stunning art, this tribute to one of Marvel's most iconic characters also includes profiles of the talented creators behind his ongoing series. And so at the bottom, it also highlights the other books. I guess they're all offered again, so you actually can order these again. But other than Marvel's Wolverine, the first 50 years, you have Marvel's Deadpool, the first 30 years, Marvel's Captain America, the first 80 years. So this goes back to his first Golden Age appearance with Jack Kirby and Joe Simon. Marvel's Fantastic Four, the first 60 years, all the way to the beginning. Marvel's Hulk, the first 60 years, which I do have that one. I also have Marvel Comics, the first 80 years. So really, really good, two very good books. Lastly, they have Marvel's Spider-Man, the first 60 years. So I hope to go and actually get these Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and Captain America at some point. Probably can't order all three of them at once, but this is a great series that they're doing, mainly on Marvel characters, it looks like. So I highly recommend it. If you see somebody that you really enjoy, they're in some of their history as we get older becomes a little gray, at least it has for me. I used to could tell you all the major appearances, maybe even what issue that certain things happen. And now it's the more volumes and the more renumberings and the more things that happen in the years that pass, it becomes harder and harder to do that. So this is a good way to have all that information in one place, in one book.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog in the Archie section. It is Archie is Mr. Justice number 1 of 4. Is one of their featured items, and I would say having any kind of a miniseries or ongoing these days from Archie is definitely an event. This is going to be 32 pages, $4.99, which I'm not particularly happy about, and we'll cover another thing here in a second, which makes me a little nervous, but the fact that it's Archie and we've got his superhero thing going on here makes me excited. And the first variant cover here is by Francesco Francavilla, which looks pretty cool. All right. Written by Tim Seeley, art by Mike Norton, Glenn Whitmore, Jack Morelli. It says, young Archie Andrews is your typical teenager, except for the fact that he has superpowers and an underlying urge to do what's right, inspiring his superhero persona, Mr. Justice. Guiding Archie on the path of heroism is his best friend, Jughead. The pair aim to right the wrongs of the greedy Hiram Lodge, who turned their tranquil hometown of Riverdale into a luxury city, forcing millions out and big business in. Can Archie's brand of justice bring Riverdale into a new prosperous era, or will his need to do good ultimately be his downfall? This is truly a love letter to the best of Archie. For fans of series like Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow and Invincible, my goodness, they're calling all kinds of big things. Now, the reason I said there was one other thing on here that made me a little nervous, not in the solicitation text, but next to it, it mentions each issue in this four-part saga features a different writer and artist team. I don't know why we really need different artists and writers to do a four-issue miniseries, but hopefully they have got a good story and they have good artists and it will be worth it. The initial art here looks decent enough. So check it out if you're an Archie fan. It'll be starting November 20th.
My next pick is also Archie as Mr. Justice on page 190 of the Diamond Previews. What I find interesting with this is not that Archie Andrews is going to be a superhero, but that he's going to be Mr. Justice, because normally, when he's a superhero, he's Pure Heart the Powerful. Now, this whole four-part saga with a different writer and artist each issue, I'm not too crazy about. Tim Seeley, Mike Norton on the first issue, though, that should be awesome. I'm curious who they've got for the rest. I wish they would have announced that. I'm wondering if it is four different takes on Archie as a superhero, or is he Mr. Justice in all of them, or what's going to be different with the different creative teams. Either way, it's a different take on Archie as a superhero. Should be fun, should be interesting, and I'm at least in for the first issue. We'll see what the creative teams look like for the others. That may determine if I'm there. But once again, this is Archie as Mr. Justice on page 190 of the Diamond Previews.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the back half of the previous catalog, and I'm in the distillery section on page 200, where we have a brand new number one, and most of the distillery books, just so you know, well, they're all like magazine size, just so that form factor bothers you, do not pick up distillery, but distillery has some really good content, but they're also almost all three issues, and then they're collected together in a hardcover, but the three issues you get are typically a ton of content. So this one is You Won't Feel a Thing, number one, written by Scott Snyder and art by Jock. And it is 48 pages. Like I said, magazine size, $8.99, but you get, I think, 40% off on distillery from Deep Discount Comics. It says modern comic writing legend Scott Snyder reunites with iconic horror artist Jock to tell the story of an ailing detective past come back to haunt him. Years ago, Jack Bernard was an accomplished homicide detective. So accomplished that it cost him everything else in his life. Now Jack finds himself alone, trapped in a retirement home with a brain tumor that is slowly sapping his once keen mind of all memories. That's kind of sad, but life happens. It's something I'm mortified of. But when an ice-cold serial killer case from out of his past rears its head, Jack must call on all his remaining memories in order to stop a killer that only he still believes really exists. You Won't Feel a Thing is a sobering murder mystery, exploring the anguish of a man whose own body and mind is turned against him, and the desire to find meaning in one's own life before it unravels. That this book speaks to me. One, it's a horror murder type thing, and a guy who wants to feel like he still has something to give while he's an invalid. You know, you want to be valid, but you're an invalid. You're losing your mind. You're fighting with your own body. It's betraying you. The reason why these things speak to me is because I'm turned 50. I'll be 51 in October. And as I age, you know, sometimes your body starts to fail you. You're like, oh, I used to do this. Now that makes you a little bit sore. The knees are a little bit sore. This is a little bit sore. It happens to all of us just aging. But something will happen to all of us where you want to do something and you can't. You want to travel. You want to visit somebody and you can't because of limitations. And that's a sad thing. And this is something that's speaking to that. So there's levels. A guy who wants to contribute and fight while at the same time his body's betraying him. Think it'll be fantastic. I like Scott Snyder as a writer. I'm going to be picking it up. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James back with, and this is I'm going to make my final pick. I'm sure there's other things I could record in here, but I've done quite a few clips, so this is going to be my final one. And this is also in the distillery section. It's on page 202, and it is The City Beneath Her Feet. And I will just say, I'm looking at the cover. I love this art. I think it's fantastic. It just works for me. the writer is James Tynion IV. James Tynion almost always works for me as a writer. Every now and then there's something I don't like, but the art is Elsa Charioteer? I don't know. I'm butchering her name, but I like her art. I think it looks good. Now, I'm going to have to tell you why I'm pointing this out. And Billy Hogan, if you're listening to this, I do listen to your clips. I think you are a big fan of the Parker Girls, Strangers in Paradise, and things like that. Okay, so listen to this clip, to this description as we get on. A bloody love letter to New York City. The City Beneath Her Feet is an action thriller love story for a new generation by lauded creators James Tynion IV and Elsa Chartier. I don't know. Room Service, Love Everlasting. That's what she's done the art on. Jasper Jane was the girl of Zara's dream, but their brief relationship came and went in such an intense blaze that Zara was left thinking Jasper was just that, a dream. Years later, Zara is thrust back into Jasper's world, unknowingly listed as her emergency contact. Zara must piece together the mystery of Jasper's life, all while being hunted by the assassins who once called Jasper one of their own. For fans of Strangers in Paradise, Kill Bill, and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Sounds like it could be fun. This is something different than what James Tynion typically writes. And like I said, the art just worked for me when I saw the art on this page. So I'm on board for it. And I recorded this one also for Billy Hogan just because he always calls out Strangers in Paradise. I know he's a fan of it. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's recording clips, everyone who's sending in clips. Thank you to John for editing this and hosting this. And hoping that I see more of you guys in the book club, which we're having a ton of fun in. And see you guys all on the Slack channel and the forums. Take care until next month. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Billy Hogan again. My final pick in this month's previews comes from the Dark Horse section on page 221 with Black Hammer, Spiral City number 2, written by Jeff Lemire with art and main cover by Teddy H. Christensen and a variant cover done by Jesse Lonergan. The Eisner Award-winning superhero saga is back in this earth-shattering story that's essential for all superhero and Jeff Lemire fans. Insect Gumshoe Inspector Insector sets up office in Supertown as a detective for hire while an evil political force enforces its totalitarian policies on the city and its heroes. Black Hammer Spiral City is the next era of the Black Hammer universe, an 8-issue dystopian event series by Jeff Lemire and Teddy Christensen, scheduled to be in shops on December 18th for the cover price of $3.99. I've been a big fan of this series ever since it was first published. I like how Jeff Lemire and his art teams have found a way to kind of spin the superhero genre on its head and create some very original characters while creating homages to some familiar heroes we've all known and loved from Marvel and DC and creating great stories in the process. So I'm looking forward to this next chapter in the history of the Black Hammer universe. Thank you, John, for providing this forum so that we can all share our enthusiasm for the comic book medium. And I look forward to listening to everyone else's picks to learn what everyone else will be reading from this month's previews.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. It's on page 227 from Dark Horse Comics. It's EC Archives, Tales from the Crypt, Volume 5, Trade Paperback. This is a great way to collect the series. It's only $19.95, and that's before discounts. And this series basically completes the Tales from the Crypt 1950s EC Comics series. So I had picked up several of these in original comic book form, not the from the 50s, but the reprints that they did, I believe in the early 90s, somewhere around that time frame. But I always felt like it was like very packaged strangely, like it would take an issue from Vault of Horror, issue from Tales from the Crypt, and just kind of mix and match the stories. And so I felt like I could never seem to get a complete collection of it. So this is a great way to do it. It has like the who's who of 1950s artists, including Joe Orlando, who's a great editor. But yeah, it's a great, probably some of the best illustrated classic horror stories that from the 50s, which I'm sure today may be a little bit outdated in the sense that it's more about the story versus the violence side of it. but I also tend to lean more towards that versus the ultra violent so-called horror books from, you know, today's age. So like I said, this is the, I believe I've been getting all of the EC archives and the trade paperback edition. They did release these in hardcover for $50 each, which are very expensive, and they always seem to be out of print and impossible to collect if you didn't jump in on it from day one. But I like these because they're going through and reprinting these. So this is the first series, I believe, that they have completely, with when this volume 5 comes out, that is, will have completely collected it. So I look forward to actually having a complete series of Tales from the Crypt from EC Comics. This is Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 323 from IPI Comics. It's Nosferatu Unbound soft cover. So I did a little bit of a research on this book and try to see. So it does look like it's actually a book versus a comic book, but I've always been fascinated with the Dracula character, and I've definitely been fascinated with the Nosferatu character, both the Max Schreck portrayal of him and then how the story of the movie originally came out. So it looks like it covers several things, but it says 1922 is when this movie first came out. He was not a glamorous, cultured European vampire like the literary Gothic Titan that we know of as Dracula. He was a more of an animalistic and hideous type of creature. So very interesting. But it says it was an unauthorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's 1897 novel Dracula. And this book talks about an important account by Dacre Stoker revealing for the first time the damaging impact the illicit breaching of the Dracula copyright had on the Stoker family. And Dracula Society member Julia Crook provides a tour of the actual locations which still stand where the 1922 classic was filmed. So very, very interesting. Like I said, this is a early movie, you know, when movies were pretty much new, a very, very interesting take on the Dracula character. So it looks like that there's actually maybe some fictional stories as well in here, but I definitely recommend this if you are a Dracula fan, a Nosferatu fan, and just curious and if you enjoyed that movie. It looks like I said, it will be some anthology stories in there. So highly recommend this book. Jason again with my second to last pick here from Tomorrow's Publishing on page 396. It's back issue 157, the Keith Giffen tribute issue. Keith Giffen tribute issue, a star-studded celebration of the work of the prolific writer slash artist of Legion of Superheroes, Rocket Raccoon, Guardians of the Galaxy, Justice League, Lobo, Blue Beetle, and many more hits from the Bronze Age and beyond, featuring Cary Bates, Tom Bierbaum, J.M. DeMatteis, Dan DiDio, Robert Lauren Fleming, Curly Hamner, Scott Koblish, Paul Levitz, who he worked with closely in the Legion of Superheroes for several years, Kevin Maguire, Bart Sears, Mark Wade, and more, representing the cover of The Son of Ambush book number 6 by Giffen and Bob Ostner. So I love these tribute issues where they go through and they have different creators who worked with the artist or writer and talk about, you know, the contributions that he made. For me, it's more of the Legion of Superheroes from the late 70s to early 80s where I really enjoyed his take on it. And I guess into the 90s, I'm not sure exactly how far the exact years that he was on the Legion of Superheroes, but I enjoyed his take, especially when he was paired as an artist working with writer Paul Levitz. That was the peak of the Legion for me, and I really, really enjoyed how he drew all the characters. Now, there was a point in time towards the end of Paul Levitz's writing run from the 80s where Keith Giffen's art completely changed basically from one issue to the next, or I think actually in the middle of an issue, and I don't recall right offhand the exact issue, but very, very interesting. So I like more of his earlier take in terms of the way he drew. A lot of people know him for his Justice League run, which was a very good and popular run as well. So we definitely lost an artist way too young, and I appreciate all that he contributed to the comic book industry. This is Jason again with my last pick on page 396, also from Tomorrow's Publishing. It's Cryptoology number 2. Hey, 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 it's me again, the cryptologist. and my ghastly little band have cooked up a few more grisly morsels to terrorize you with. Amongst them is Roger Hill's conversation with diabolical Don Heck, along with a complete 1950s story by that fabled horror comics artist. For something even more gruesome, Steve Cronenberg slices up his favorite severed hand films. Barry Forshaw brings back the otherworldly horrors of Hammer's Quatermass, while Tim Lee spends more Hammer time on that studio's output. Then Richard Hand resurrects spooky old radio shows, while Peter Normington prepares a viewing of horror-inspired covers from the Shadow's own 1940s comic book. Peer into the dark side with Tomorrow's Publishing latest terror scribed just for retro horror fans. So I like this, how it's encompassing several different genres. So it's not just comic books, even though I look forward to seeing the 1940s Shadows comic book covers. It talks about different movies and things like that. So I really enjoy that. I'm also looking forward to seeing how, I believe Don Heck was a very good artist. So I look forward to seeing his story back from the 50s. So it seems to be, you know, both film, magazine, and series like that. So I look forward to checking this out. I have not received Cryptology issue 1 yet, but hopefully it will be coming out here shortly. So Tomorrow's definitely puts together a wonderful magazine and in very in-depth and very, very interesting. So I'm glad to be getting on this new magazine from the ground floor up.
Brawlinator here, and for my final pick this month, if you were a fan of the original animated series or Disney's X-Men 97, this newly remastered collection of X-Men the Manga Remastered Volume 1 may be for you. Now, this is a deluxe manga adaptation of the first season of X-Men the Animated Series published by Viz Media. It follows the original series, following along with Jubilee, who is at the time a teenage mutant as she's trying to live a normal life while being hunted by Sentinels. This is an English translation, but it brings back the classic manga originally released back in late 90s by Bamboo Comics over in Japan. And it does adapt the first two seasons of the show. And again, may be a must-have, I think, of fans of the original series or Disney's X-Men 97 or both. It's another nostalgic dive into the world of Marvel's mutants. And I wanted to especially spotlight it because this is back in near the back of the book where manga is solicited, and I didn't want you to miss it, particularly if you were a fan of the animated series. The artwork looks great. This was pretty highly revered at the time, and this deluxe remastered edition may be a must-have for you. And that's it for me. Thanks again to John, James, Sam, Eric, Kay, everyone else that helps make the Comic Book Page podcast and the Slack channel possible. I say it every month. It's still so true. It's a great community, and I do encourage others to join the discussions. Now, September is John Mayo's birthday, and there is a nice little PayPal feature on the main website if you want to send in a little donation for all this free infotainment he's been providing for well over a decade. Just a suggestion, not an order. But I hope everybody's ready to have a good fall now that summer's over. I am looking forward to hearing your selections this month, and I hope you'll try and join us on the book club one night. Thanks again, John.
I hope everybody found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs this month. We had a really solid turnout this time in terms of the number of clips, the length of the clips. We're at about 2 hours, I think, now, a little over. I want to thank Jason, James, Chris Brawley, the Brawlinator, Billy Hogan, Nicholas Fenner, and Mo Walker. Would have been a way shorter episode without you guys, so thanks again for sending in the clips. The Preview Spotlight has an open submission policy. I want to get more voices and opinions in these episodes. We've got our regulars. They're great, they're awesome, but I want to hear what the rest of you think, too. Sending in a clip is as easy as recording it on your computer or smartphone and sharing it with me through email or Dropbox. Sending in a single clip is fine, and the reason I want more people participating, each of you have a different taste in comics, a different perspective on comics, and you may find things that the rest of us are just missing. It's flown under our radar, or you know something about it that would convince us to get it. And if you don't participate, then I don't know you're out there listening. You can participate by sending in clips to the Preview Spotlight, or by joining the conversation on the Slack channel and the forum, or by sending in questions for the Monthly Comics Spotlight or the Back Issue Spotlights, Astro City, Legion, Warlord, or just emailing me and letting me know you exist and what you think of the podcast. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. I think you're listening to this because you enjoy listening and talking about comics. So join the conversation. Now, the deadline for the preview spotlight is normally the second Saturday of the month. Early submissions are always appreciated. You can always check the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on the next deadline and to sign up for email reminders. The deadline for preview spotlight number 203 covering the October solicitations is 9 a.m. Saturday, October 12th, 2024. Again, I want to thank the people who sent in clips, and I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully you discovered something new in this episode, and with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.